Chapter 5. Only complete and true faith enables the soul to accept with joy everything that happens to it. The reproaches and unjustifiable criticisms of people said to be wise and pious. Nothing is safer than the way of self-abandonment, nor is anything plainer, easier, or more enjoyable and less subject to blunders and errors. God is loved, Christian duties are fulfilled. We frequent the sacraments and perform every one of those outward, visible acts of religion which are binding on everyone. Our superiors are obeyed, and our normal duties are fulfilled. We always resist the temptations of the flesh and the devil, for no one is more careful and alert in doing what they have to do than those who walk along this way. Now, if this is true, why is it that such people are so often abused? One reason is that when, like many other Christians, they have done all that is demanded by the strictest theologians, they are expected to adopt tiresome practices which the Church does not require, and if they do not, they are told they are wrong. But let us look at a Christian who is satisfied by obeying the commandments of God and the Church. He neither meditates nor contemplates, reads no spiritual books, has no interest in any special devotion, and is concerned with business and the other affairs of life in the world. Can he be condemned? Can we even suspect him of being wrong? Of course not. We must admit this. So if we leave in peace the Christian of whom I have just spoken, it is only fair not to trouble a soul who not only fulfills the precepts at least as well as the average Christian, but also performs both outward and inner acts of piety, which the ordinary Christian hardly knows exist, and if he does, is quite indifferent to them. Prejudice goes so far as to declare that such souls are suffering from delusions, because when they have done all that the Church requires of them, they feel free to surrender themselves without reserve to the hidden, intimate activity of God, and to follow the promptings of His grace wherever they may have no other essential duties to carry out. In short, they are blamed because they spend their time in loving God, which others give to amusement and worldly affairs. Now this is not grossly unfair. This point cannot be too strongly stressed. Let us take someone who lives conventionally and goes to confession once a year. No one talks about him, and he is left in peace, except for an occasional suggestion to try to do a little more. But the pressure on him is never great, and the suggestion is never made a matter of obligation. But if it should happen that he decides to rise above the mass of conventional Christians, he will be overwhelmed with advice about his spiritual life. If he does not commit himself to follow the established rules of spirituality, he is in trouble. People imagine the worst and mistrust his manner of life. Surely they should realize that these rules, however good and useful, are only the road leading to union with God. Do they want someone who has reached this goal to stay on the road? Yet this is what they ask of a soul which they think is the victim of delusion. But this soul started on this road as so many others have done. It knew and followed faithfully all the accepted practices, but now it would be pointless to try to compel it to remain subject to them. For God, moved by the efforts of this soul has made to advance by these methods, comes and takes upon himself to lead it to that blessed union. So since the soul has reached the region where the whole climate is one of self-abandonment, and where love enables us to possess God, and since He, who is all goodness, has replaced all these methods and practices by Himself, they are no longer of any use to the soul. They are the road by which it once traveled and has now left behind. If we insist that to abandon the goal it has reached and return to the road which led it there, it is folly. If the soul is experienced, such demands would be a waste of time and trouble, and it would remain quite unmoved by all the turmoil, indifferent to all noise and uproar. Ignoring them, it would stay peaceful and unmoved in that intimate peace where it benefits so greatly by the manifestation of its love. This is the center where it rests, or, if you prefer, it is the straight line drawn by the hand of God, and one which it will always follow. It will walk steadfastly along it, and from moment to moment it will be told its duties. As they appear, they will be fulfilled, without any haste or fluster. In everything else, the soul will preserve a perfect liberty, always ready to obey the stirrings of grace the moment it becomes aware of them, and to surrender itself to the care of Providence. God tells the soul that He is its master, and He means to direct it as He wishes, so it must not tolerate any check on its own freedom, or it would be attacking the overriding rights of its Creator. For if it felt itself bound to the rules which govern those who conduct their lives by them, in their own efforts, instead of cooperating with God's grace, it would cut itself off from 1,000 things it needs to fulfill its future duties. But as people do not know this, they condemn this attitude for its simplicity. So the souls who condemn no one, who approve of every state, and know very well how to assess the various stages of spiritual progress, are yet despised by those would-be pundits who can never rightly value this gentle and wholehearted submission to Providence. The worldly wise have no sympathy with the endless wandering of the apostles, who could not settle anywhere, and many ordinary religious people cannot bear the thought of souls who let all they do depend on Providence. But there are a few who approve of them, and God, who teaches men by means of their fellow creatures, always ensures that they come across those who have simply and trustingly abandoned themselves. These latter need less direction than others, for they have reached their present state with the help of very sound directors, and if they sometimes find that they are left on their own, it is because Providence has removed these directors, either by death or by sending them to a post a long distance away. But they will remain willing to be directed and peacefully await the will of God. When they are suffering this privation, they meet from time to time persons they feel they can trust, although they know nothing about them. This is a sign that God is using these strangers to help them, and the deprived soul asks advice of them and follows it with greatest docility. But if they do not come across such people, they follow the maxims given them by their first directors, and so they never lack sound direction.